Hey, you want to see something really scary?
What's your favorite scary movie?
I'm going to scare the hell out of you.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
What's blood for, if not for shedding?
Welcome to Fright Night.
Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
And I'm Chad.
This week, we're covering Late Night with the Devil.
On Halloween night, 1977, America gathered around for a live TV event that shocked the nation. What happened was real. What you are about to see is the recently discovered master tape of what went to air that night.
If Mr. Ladies and gentlemen,
Night with the Devil.
So we were able to catch the film.
A late night show of Late Night with the Devil.
And it was wonderful to see it amongst a crowd, as it should be watched. But if you can't catch it while it's in theaters, it's going to be streaming next month on Shudder.
Yeah, I think it's the 19th is when it comes out.
And it's definitely one of those films that you should watch either way. The cast includes...
As Jack Delroy, the host of Night Owls, is going to be David Deshmalin. And he is quite a fan of horror hosts, apparently. At the upcoming Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans, he's going to be hosting the Creature from the Black Lagoon 3D showing as his character, a horror host. So that's pretty fun, and he seems to be into that. That's always, I always like it when the actors really seem to be into what they're doing, you know? Yeah. So he seems like he's really into that, and that's always cool.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job on playing the talk show host, Jack Delroy. We also have the little girl that's having the exorcism done, which we're not giving anything away because this is all in the trailer, is Ingrid Torelli. Her name in the film is Lily. And Laura Gordon, who's her caretaker slash parapsychologist, is June.
Yeah, that's a little questionable. You let the woman studying her as a parapsychologist just adopt her? That seems kind of... not a good thing. But it was the 70s. I mean, Steven Tyler adopted a woman, so...
Well, enough of that.
The film was written and directed by a duo, Colin and Cameron Cairns. They're brothers, and they've done some other films, including one called Scare Campaign and another one called 100 Bloody Acres. And Scare Campaign is another one about a talk show, so I think these guys have a thing.
Yeah, they have a thing about talk shows.
They've got a thing about talk shows and TV shows, so that's going to be their thing. Which, good for them, they seem to be doing pretty good at it.
Yes, they are totally into the talk show thing, and they must have been around during this time frame, 70s, 80s, I'm just going to assume. If not, they are like really into that whole thing because
they're just really into it because they were not around in the 70s.
Oh, okay, well, they really... like hit it on the nose, because you know there's a lot of films that come out that are set during a certain time, and a lot of those films I feel like if you either know about what it's supposed to look like or you lived it, you feel like they're trying too hard and it just doesn't look right, because it's just one of those things like, oh, the 80s, everyone wore neon, or the girl's hair were like on a side ponytail, like just basic stuff like you just pick up on like Pinterest or you just Google.
I always equate it to, it's like the Friends episode where they flash back to the 80s and they have like 90 80s cliches all in one like 5-minute thing. Everybody comes in dressed like Miami Vice. Everybody's do, you know, they do this whole thing. And it's like, they're like, we're in the 80s. We're in the 80s. You're trying too hard. Just one thing would have let you know they were in the 80s. You didn't need to do 40.
But they just did such a great job. The, you know, the look of it. The look of, there's two portions, and we discussed this afterwards. There's, right off the bat, you know, this is a found footage film. They just go right into that, and they do that whole, like, it's on an old TV, and they're gonna just show you images at first, of what was going on in the 70s, which we've covered many times on this podcast, because we've done a lot of films during that period. And a lot of those films are cult-based. So, and so is this one. It is very culty. And it's
cults just... Cults were king in the 70s, man. The devil, cults, everybody had to be in a cult or worshiping the devil.
Yeah, satanic panic. Like, that was the thing. And you see, like, made-for-TV movies, articles, so many things that were going on. Just revolving that. I can't even get the word out.
Revolving. There you go.
And... You know, they took that and they ran with it. You know, you feel like you're watching a TV show. Even if you've happened to just come across something on like YouTube or like the old like Price is Right or anything during that time frame, the look of it is perfect. I mean, you got the browns.
Oh, yeah. My God. Everything was brown. So brown.
Like, what was up with the brown? You know, the clothing was all fantastic. The hair, there wasn't something that stood out that irked me, that made me say like, oh, now mind you, I was not born in the 70s. I was not alive. So, but I've seen enough, a lot of it to know like, okay, this looks good or this doesn't look good, you know? And the whole like late night TV was insane back in the 70s and the 80s. It was, you know, Johnny Carson, which they do obviously mention in this film a lot, because this talk show host, which the whole beginning of the movie, and when I mean the whole, I mean maybe like 5 to 10 minutes of the film, they give you a lot of background information on him really fast, which you need because it's going to explain why, like his motive throughout, which is very apparent what his motive is when you're watching the movie. But to give you kind of a background history, he is a comedian. Actually a radio host who became a TV host. He rose up the ranks.
He got a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger until he was starting to get to be a rival of Carson, apparently. Yeah.
And he is also part of a cult, which that was kind of like neither here or there. They weren't saying that it was a cult per se, but it was a gentleman's club. Which
that meets in the woods and likes to participate in arcane rituals.
I'm done. Which is actually, now this is the crazy thing about the movie. Now, the movie, a lot of people, because this happens all the time with found footage, right? People want to know, is this based on a true story? Is this true? Right off the bat, everyone's saying, nah, this is not a true story. It isn't to some degree, because there are a lot of elements that are factual.
That are based on true things that happened in this, like incidents on different talk shows. A lot of the characters are based on real people. this is one of those ones where everything in it is, it's not like one story that inspired it, it's 40 stories that inspired it.
Yeah.
Even to the point of, I meant to tell you this last night, The one person they talk to that's the cult leader, that's the Xandar Diabo, He is very similar to Anton Xandar LaVey that headed the Church of Satan throughout the 70s and 80s. And everyone, when he was on Geraldo, he was on all the talk shows back in the day. And it was Anton Xandar LaVey. And this guy's Xandar Diabo. Mm-hmm. So that's clearly supposed to be Anton LaVey. They just don't call him that so they don't get sued.
Okay. But he's also mixed with the Jack Randy character.
No.
Or, right? Well, no, only because of the... Oh, no, it's the other character that's...
Yeah.
That's
it's,
in
it's the Amazing Randy is more of the Carmichael Randy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where they got that from. This is... I'm talking about the guy who was the leader of the cult that the girl was involved with.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes.
Xandar Diabo. And he was literally wearing the same kind of outfits and everything that Anton LaVey did. And I was thinking about that during the movie, and then I looked later, and I'm like, yeah, that was his... I couldn't remember. I remembered Anton LaVey, but I knew he had a crazy middle name that he always put out there. But yeah, it was Anton Xandar LaVey.
Now, this Grove Gentlemen's Club that Delroy is a part of, there is an actual place in California, Bohemian Grove Campground in California, where there is a private gentlemen's club made up of prominent men, about like 2,000 of them, and that this part is real, and it's the Bohemian Club. And there is a photo of summer of 67 at the Owl's Nest Camp that has Nixon sitting at the table in this photo, and it's one of those meetings that this club had to discuss, you know, various whatever backdoor things that we're doing. And I just find that so interesting because in the film, they mention all of these things to some extent. They mention that he's part of this club. They meet, it's a campground in California where they meet and they have, you know, their rituals. The mascot for the actual, you know, Bohemian Club is an owl.
And it's an owl in this one, too.
And it's also an owl in the film. The name of the late night talk show is the Night Owls.
Yeah.
Which, hello. So it's one of those things where it's just like, right off the bat, they're telling you, alert, alert, this guy is in a cult. And some shit's going to go down. Like, we're not going to really go, I mean, I guess either way, we'll go into not specific of what goes down, but some shit goes down and it's filmed live, you know, and it's one of those things with the found footage, like, who found the footage? We never, things that are not going to be answered, who found the footage? How did it come about? The ending is kind of left open-ended, so we won't go into that. But the other thing, the other basis from the movie is that this is very also Australian TV talk show called the Don Lane Show, which had a similar incident. That show ran from like the 70s into the early 80s. That had an incident that kind of happened in the film where there are two people, one person who is the character you were saying before, kind of
Carmichael, they call him like Carmichael's his name. And he gets, you know, some stuff happens with him and another character getting into an argument. And that's very similar to something that happened on that Don Lane show.
Yeah.
To the point, like, even the glasses they're drinking out of are almost identical.
Well, the glass table.
Oh, the glass table, yeah.
Yeah, the glass table is identical to the one in the film.
Everybody had the same glasses in the 70s, though, so it was fine.
Now, as you know... In that time frame, there were a lot of, you know, psychics and a lot of mediums and a lot of people going out doing their thing. And people were coming in, like, droves to see these certain kind of people do readings and whatever. And the whole thing with the film, one part of it is what we're discussing is, like, the whole cold reading thing. You know, you have, like, the person going up saying they're able to communicate with the dead.
Oh, I'm getting the sense that someone lost a spouse in here. Of course, the 99 times out of 100, someone there did.
Yeah.
So you can always just keep going from there. And it always is amazing that that stuff works as well as it does.
It's also amazing how people want to believe something so, like, badly because they are trying to find, you know, some closure or they're still grieving in the process. But what I found interesting in this film, which I haven't really seen in other films that do this kind of, like, kind of thing, which I'm trying to really think, like, has there been another film that kind of, like, shows, like, within a horror film that kind of shows, like, the whole, like, back end of, like, a cold reading was that we find out the Carmichael character asks one of the audiences during a break, the audience members that had their reading.
Yeah, he's like, Did anyone ask you to fill out a questionnaire before the show? And they're like, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And then he said, did you have talked to anyone before the show? And oh, that nice lady that came out earlier, she asked us a couple of questions. And you realize, like, that's how he knew a lot of this information. He set himself up to do one failure where he could kind of fail one time and everyone could go, oh, I don't know about this guy. And then the very next time, he nails it. So then that gives people an opportunity to be like, you know what? This guy was all right. He's not perfect. He made a mistake, but he got there in the end.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a trick that they've always talked about in like the Sherlock Holmes adaptations. When they have Holmes meet Watson or meet someone for the first time, he'll do these like three things where he guesses about him, but he always gets one wrong so that you know he's not perfect. He nails two guesses like about Watson, what's over, oh, your shoes are this, or your coat is this because of this. And then the last one, he always messes up. That way you know Sherlock's not perfect. So that's what they do. He was setting up with this is like, hey, see, I made a mistake. I'm not perfect, but I do know how to talk to the dead.
Yeah. So now they do, and this is the one issue I would say that we had with the film was that if it's a found footage film, so they right off the bat they tell you right off like this is what's happening.
This was a surviving master copy of the tape from that night.
Yeah, from Halloween of whatever.
Halloween of 1977.
Yeah, which I gotta love a movie that's like set in Halloween.
Oh yeah, this goes into the movie set on Halloween file. We should do a list of that one sometime. We should come up this year. We should do a list of the best top 10 movies set on Halloween that are not Halloween.
Oh, okay. Well, this one was set on Halloween, right?
Yeah.
So this, well, yes. That are not Halloween, the Michael Myers movie.
Not John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yes. Not John Carpenter's Halloween. The not John Carpenter's Halloween list. So, and I love, there's audience members. Let me tell you. The audience members that they chose, everyone looked like they were from the 70s. I like think like, wait a second, were these people like just picked off from like, you know, removed from a 70s like thing and just placed in there like digitally like somehow, like
I'm
some
guessing
CGI?
Some of those older people had been around in the 70s because they looked like they would just put their clothes on they had in the closet and came in there.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. Like the look of the people were very 70s, like hairstyles, the glasses they're wearing, like everything about them.
And I'll tell you one thing, as soon as they focus down on the guy that's just wearing the Don Post skull mask sitting there in the skeleton outfit, I was like, I don't trust this guy.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy, there's something wrong. That guy.
Whoever's underneath there, because you don't know if it's a guy or a girl or what. Whoever's underneath there.
That's bad news. I don't trust that person right off the bat. Nope.
No.
You get someone in the skeleton mask just sitting quietly in the audience alone? No. Nope. Get that man out now.
Bad news bears.
Put him right out there on the street. That's where they need to be.
So you have the audience members, or some of them are dressed up, because there's going to be later on in the TV show, there's going to be a Halloween parade with the, because, you know, that's a thing, to have the, you know, audience members come around in a Halloween parade, and which they did do back in the day, believe it or not. There were Halloween parades. There was like a Halloween mascot that would, you know, lead the parade, and they would have like, not a wand, but like a staff or something to like lead the parade, which
like
I'm
a baton
like
baton of some kind.
Yeah, we need to bring that back, because
when I was in school, every Halloween they put all the kids in the costumes together and just marched them around the neighborhoods.
My sister, who is now in her 30s, she just entered her 30s. She had a Halloween parade when she was in school. I had one too. That's not a thing that I have seen done so far within our own daughter's school life. No Halloween parade, but that would be super cute, but I digress. We have the cast members, you know, I'm sorry, we have the audience members dressed up, so some of them, you know, have mask on, whatnot. There was one that was very questionable. I was like, what is this supposed to be, this hooded white figure?
It was supposed to be a mummy, but it was a little weird. But then that was some of the that was going to be those cheap homemade costumes back in the
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
You're going to be like, authentic. What the hell is this? Oh, it's supposed to be the mummy. I get it. He just wrapped himself in toilet paper. Okay.
Yeah. Dude, this is not toilet paper. This was like cloth, but it was kind of pointy in the top, and it was questionable. And I'm like, okay, well, it is that time frame, so I don't know. Maybe, but it was a mummy. Just in case anyone watches the film. I think people are talking about the film. The main thing, this is what I don't like about modern times, people always want to pick on the one thing. Like, oh, the one thing that's bothering us. And there are three AI images in this film. And they didn't take... It's not an actor. No one lost a job. Like, it's just literally transitional stuff from, like, we'll be right back from, you know, the late night, you know, show. They would always show, like, an image. And the image was... And all these images were Halloween images. Were, like, vintage Halloween images. And I guess what... tipped people off was when there's a skeleton image and supposedly the skeleton has seven fingers. Now let me tell you, this image on the screen is on for like 2 seconds. So whoever like literally was like, well, that skeleton has seven fingers, get a life. Like, move on with your life. I don't know what you're doing that you had to notice that. And that's all I want to talk about, the AI thing, because that has been the most talked about thing about this film.
It doesn't distract from the movie.
No.
If you didn't tell me, I wouldn't know. It's not one of those issues where, like, the AI wrote part of the script and it's really weird.
Exactly.
Or sounds crazy or whatever. It's just...
Or it took someone's job away. Like, we just bought in, like, you know, someone... We stole someone's image or we borrowed it and we just put an AI to, like, write their scene. And it's nothing like that.
No,
so
it's just some images that are literally, simplistic. Like... Yeah, scene transitions. Because the old 70s thing, they literally just had someone painting a picture or drawing a picture for this kind of thing. And it was like, you know, the Carson show or whatever would be like a caricature of some of him or something on the desk. And it would be like, we'll be right back. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Go to commercial, you know.
Yeah,
this That's the kind of things that they're using for it. It's just some quick... almost like promotional art, like you would use.
Exactly. And it's an indie film. Like, no, like, when it comes to, like, these kind... This is, like a huge, you know, studio film where they were going to have a designer on set or an artist on set, you know, to pay them to do this. And it was going to be whatever for a 2 second screen thing.
It's fine.
This is like, I make the movie and I'm like, you know what? I don't have the money to do this. I'm just going to get one image of AI and just have the image there because, you know, I'm paying this out of my pocket. I'm not a bajillionaire. Like, obviously, you know, this is one of those things. It just didn't need to be a huge thing like it is, but this is the world that we live in.
You know what bothered me more about the movie than anything was the 45 minutes of studio intros at the beginning of it.
Oh, yes. There were a lot of studios that, like, that were... That actually became comical to me. I'm like, look, I understand.
That's the only part of the movie where people were actually like laughing at the movie. There were so many like... logos of different studios at the beginning that it had to have gone on for at least 3 full minutes of just logos of different studios, and you're like, okay. It reminded me, there's a Family Guy where he just freaks the hell out in the movie theater because it just keeps doing the logos for so long on it. That's exactly what it reminded me of, was that. And I'm like, okay, this has been like at least 3 minutes of the runtime. It's just been studio. I've never seen one with that many like produced by different things at the front before. It was just comical. That to me was the only thing that I found irritating about the movie.
Now, I have to say that we didn't say whether or not this was going to be a spoil or non-spoiler. I'm not going to really spoil anything per se, but because the trailer shows so much of it, but their two guests, June and Lily, that come on. And the whole thing is that there's this book that the parapsychologist wrote named Conversations with the Devil.
Yep.
And the great, first of all, great name for a book, great cover, and very 70s-like. Like,
yeah.
Perfect, right? Fantastic. That they come on as guests to discuss this girl's, you know, life and what's happened to her and whatnot.
Which her history... does bear a little bit of a resemblance to a movie we covered recently called Bad Dreams.
Like,
she's
very close.
Part of a cult that when the police start to close in on them, they all set themselves on fire and burn the house up, and she's the only survivor. Now, not unlike Bad Dreams, she didn't go into a coma for 13 years. She just survived the house fire. But we were kind of like, oh, that's familiar.
Yeah, I was like, that's Bad Dreams. That's Bad Dreams.
Now, to be fair, that movie doesn't get a lot of press and doesn't get talked about a lot. So we might not have caught on to that if we hadn't watched it recently.
That's very true.
So that's one that would slide by a lot of people, too, if you don't...
Like 90% of people,
probably. Yeah, if you hadn't just watched that recently or been a fan of that movie.
Yeah, because it is one of those, like, under-the-radar films. That was a close resemblance to that film. But and that's really where it ends, because where it takes off...
Yeah, but it was just funny, because we both at the same time were like, hey, wait a minute, that seems familiar.
Now... I don't know if this was a thing, because I wasn't really alive during that time frame. But was there any point, maybe Geraldo, right? I mean, I know that's more like, was there any point where there was an exorcism, a live exorcism at any point?
I don't remember anything. I mean, Geraldo did some crazy shit, but he never did an exorcism that I can remember. I don't remember anyone doing that, just because I think it would have... Either it would have been like the Geraldo opening Al Capone's vault.
Yeah.
Either you open it and there's nothing in it, which is what happened to Geraldo, or it goes very badly. You open it and it's full of bodies and gruesome on live TV. So I think that's why they never tried that.
That portion of it I found very comical, because I love the film that I'm about to mention that came out in 1990. Called Repossessed. And that's literally the whole thing of the movie, is that they want to catch exorcism live. And the woman, now a woman, that's having the exorcism is Linda Blair. Now, of course, obviously, for all intent purposes, you know, legal purposes, it's not the exact same character from The Exorcist, but it is the actress playing Reagan. So that part, and there is a live exorcism. So that part was just like, oh, that's funny. Like, that just reminds me of that movie that I, you know, with Leslie Nielsen and Linda Blair and Ned Beatty. I can't even say his name. That did that film. So there's a portion of that. But this exorcism and the Late Night with the Devil does not fare well. That's
yeah, where... Well, you knew that going in.
Well, yeah,
There's no movie if this goes well. Oh, like...
They all have a milkshake after, and it's great.
Everything turned out great. They just exercised. They did the exorcism. They did the... Well, it's not really an exorcism in this. It's just a conversation where they're just going to talk to the devil. But, like, they... You know, if the devil just came out and said, hey, how you doing? How's everybody? How's it hanging? And then just went back, there would be no movie. So you know it's going to go bad right off the bat.
Well, exorcism... yes, you're correct. You're right. It's not really an exorcism. But they pull this demon out to have the conversation. Conversations with the devil, wink, wink. And then they exorcise the demon back in to the depths or whatever, and brings back the little girl. Right off the bat, the little girl, this actress, Ingrid Torelli, fantastic. It did a fantastic job. As soon as she comes out onto the stage, I'm like, there's something wrong with that girl. She creepy.
Yeah.
And man, does she look fantastic. Like, she looks like a girl in the 70s. The hair was perfect. The hair. And you think, like, what's the big deal? There was something about 70s straight hair where it always looked dirty. Like, you know, like, were people washing their hair, you know, at that time frame? I don't know. But it was always, like, straggly and, like, dirty looking, but still nice, you know? I don't know. It's very weird. But right on point with that whole look. And she did a fantastic job, you know, with the demon. His name, Mr. Wiggles.
Yeah, Mr. Wiggles.
Wiggles, which right then you're like, no, that's not a good thing.
No, he don't need to be wriggling anything in here. Just get out.
Now, the reason why I say the repossessed thing is the correlation I make is, now, this is what I took away from the film. This demon wanted to be on TV.
Yeah.
He wanted to reach the masses and kind of have like a Halloween 3 thing going on, where this shit gets activated and then released into everyone's homes. So he's able to do whatever evil deed that he's trying to do. And who knows? That's the part of the movie that I do like. Was he able to get out and affect multiple people, or have an effect, or escape, you know, the body that he was imprisoned in? We don't know. That's kind of left like, we just don't know. Because of what happens, which I'm not going to say, but what happens kind of leads to, like, maybe that was the whole objective. And that's the whole objective in Repossessed. Like, the demon wants to be filmed because it wants to get out on, you know, onto the world, kind of thing. But
it's reminded me too a little bit as we were watching. I was thinking of that one that we haven't covered it, but we have seen it. That one that came out in the 90s in England called Ghost Watch.
Oh, yes.
Which is a similar concept of, it's a news program that's going to, you know, they're going to investigate a haunted house live on the air. And things go very badly on that one, too. Which, you know, kind of reminded me of that, especially the end where the studio just kind of breaks out into wild, crazy chaos happens at it. Like, that goes on in Ghost Watch, too. So, yeah, there's a little similarity to that, too. But they're both good movies, but I'm like, Ghost Watch is one that, another one that flies under the radar, too.
Oh, for sure.
If you haven't seen it, you wouldn't even catch on to that, so.
I give this film 3 knives.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. The ending, I have things to say, not going to say, because I don't want to really give away the ending too much, but, or at all.
Yeah, I feel like the ending, they could have done a little bit more with the ending, but I think they might be trying to set up a sequel.
Maybe. And then the other thing about the film, which I kind of started off, but then we kind of trolled away from it, was the transition between found footage, between the TV show, like, while it's filming.
Yeah.
And then the behind the scenes.
That was a little odd because, you know, the actual TV show looks very much like a TV show from the 70s. It has that filmed on video look.
Yeah.
And, you know, the characters, they're just doing everything naturally. What you also see is they said, we also found some behind the scenes footage that we're going to edit into it and put there as well. The behind the scenes footage is like crystal clear black and white photography of everything that's going on. And it's very obviously just filmed like they're, you know, they go from one person to the next and everything. It's just filmed like a regular movie.
Who filming that part?
Yeah, who was filming that? Because they never explained that. And if that had been just something they were filming behind the scenes in the 70s at the time, I feel like, one, it would have just been in color.
Yes.
Because it would have just been on video as well. And it would have been the same quality as that. I know they needed to differentiate between what went on the air and what didn't. But I just felt like they could have done it a little bit differently, because it was a little distracting, because the behind the scenes portion of it is so well done, like with the photography and that.
It looks fucking amazing. It is clear. It is the clearest black and white you ever saw in your life.
Yeah. So that's my only real quibble with it, because I'm giving it 3 knives as well. It's a great film, but that's my problem with it, is that I wish they had done something a little differently with the found, with the behind the scenes footage part of it.
And let's be real, there was not going to be behind the scenes at that time if they're trying to hide stuff, because the stuff that's behind the scenes, which I understand is needed to, one, move the movie forward, two, to discuss things between the characters that are going on.
And explain some things.
Yes.
It would have been better if it was like all the behind the scenes things were shot from like, if it was wanted to do black and white, fine. It's shown from like a fixed black and white camera, like a security camera.
Exactly. That would have been better.
Like, show totally. It from that. And then like they keep going to the same spot because that's the behind the scenes area where everyone goes.
Yes, because no one at that time frame is doing our Carvel like behind the scenes thing for a DVD release, you know, like extras. No one is doing that. No one is doing that at that time frame. Nothing behind the scenes were being filmed.
Yeah, there's very few like making of things from back in those '70s earlier.
So that's not something that you would see in that during that time frame at all. And then it would have been perfect if it was security footage, because of course you don't want people stealing or, you know, doing whatever shit behind the scenes. So they would have been like studio security footage, and that would have made more sense. And I could just
wink at the fact that, oh, it has sound for some reason, because it probably wouldn't have sound.
Exactly.
But I could just be like, oh, wink, okay, it has sound, fine, whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't that sophisticated back then, but it's definitely a modern movie made by modern people, obviously people of our time, where they think, no one is going to be thinking this, because the people that are going to go, the demographic of this film is going to be like age 13, or I don't know if it was rated R, but
it was
age 17 plus. And anyone from 17 to like 30s, maybe mid-30s, is not going to have the knowledge of, hey, well, this wasn't a thing in the 70s. They're not going to be able to pinpoint that unless they're really into the 70s, you know, or, you know, that time frame and know about that wouldn't have existed. They're just going to accept it. Right now, the audiences, you can just throw whatever the fuck you want in their face and do whatever when it comes to a period time, like a time period, because the people were not probably alive and they don't know enough about it to have an opinion on the matter to say, well, no, that's not right. Like when they have like Stranger Things or, you know, these other popular things that come out, these movies, and it's like, it's set in 1985 and then they're playing music from like 1987, you know, or 1990 that didn't even exist in 1985, but no one's going to catch on to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's watching that. They're going to be like, oh yeah, that's an 80s song. Like they're not going to know. Only the older people are going to be like, excuse me, you cannot play that specific song because that did not exist at that time, kind of shit. So it's one of those things like they weren't thinking like, oh, anyone's going to be pinpointing that, you know. But I do find it really interesting how we have another film about Hollywood or the what entertainment, you know, aspect of that it's tied to cults. Because it's not the first movie, right?
No.
You know, we've mentioned this other movie, Starry Eyes, so many times. I'm like, we should just fucking cover the movie. Starry Eyes, which I love, that has that Hollywood cult connection, how you get famous, you know, the sacrifices that have to be made, the things, the back-end dealings kind of thing. And that part is the creepy part for me. Because it's like, is it real? Because they could have literally not said, oh, this is the Grove and it has this owl. There are just so many things that these choices that were made on who the people were and who this organization is and all these things. They just could have renamed and completely had no ties to anything that was in real life.
Yeah.
Right? But they chose to include that. And that's the part that I find interesting. Like, we trying to wink, wink, bring some awareness to that. Maybe that's what the whole AI thing is, a distraction. It's a distracting from the real back-end things that are happening there and what they're really trying to say about the industry, you know. And I hope now we're not in anyone's radar. And we don't believe it's all fictional. Well, thank you so much for joining us in another episode of Jump Scare, the horror podcast. Stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.